Hey everyone, welcome to the Next Year Amigos podcast. Tom and I are joined by Petros Grivas. I'm actually with Petros in Louisville right now. We were at an event together, just finished our talks, doing a little post-talk podcast. And today we're going to talk about antibody-drug conjugates, or ADCs, in bladder cancer. Several different ones, several different data sets, all very exciting. And we're just going to kind of go through one by one and talk about basically the latest data. So Tom, I'll kick it over to you first to talk about, you're going to start with which one, I'm sorry?
Infortumab vedotin,
oh,
Brian.
EV, right. Yes, I've heard of
that one. Yes.
I've heard of it.
Good for you.
Even I've heard of it. So, all right.
Okay.
Tell us the latest and greatest on EV.
So I'll be very quick. So infortumab vedotin is an antibody drug conjugate. It targets Nectin-4. It has MMAE as a payload, which is a microtubule disrupting agent. It's had a series of phase two studies with response rate consistent at about 40% in platinum refractory disease. And then EV301 reported, which is the randomized phase three, which showed a 30% reduction in the risk of death in immune and platinum refractory urothelial cancer with an overall survival of about 13 months. Again, a 40% response rate and impressive data. There's a toxicity profile with some skin toxicity, peripheral neuropathy, and hyperglycemia and a metabolic syndrome, all of which can be managed. The skin toxicity need to be really cautious in the first two or three cycles, and the peripheral neuropathy accumulates with time. This then prompted a combination study with pembrolizumab. That pembrolizumab trial was initially a phase two in cisplatin ineligible, and then a randomized phase two called Cohort K. And in those trials, the response rates were between 65 and 73% for the combination, with progression-free survival of about 12 months and overall survival, some immature data, of course, of about 24 months. When one thinks about chemotherapy, of response rates of about 45% and progression-free survival of about 7 months and OS of about 12 months, it looks better. And that prompted a randomized phase three trial. And that randomized phase three study is EV302, which compares chemotherapy with EV plus Pembro. And we're looking forward to that soon. There is some monotherapy frontline data as well. The response rate's not as high at about 45%. And so it does look like pembrolizumab adds something to infortumab vedotin in terms of response and duration, but we need to wait for the randomized phase three. There's also perioperative trials. We've got single agent data in muscle-invasive urothelial cancer with a path CR rate of about 35%. And we've got Pembro plus EV and in the neoadjuvant setting, and we've got Durva-Tremi EV in the neoadjuvant setting in three neoadjuvant randomized phase three studies. So an incredibly ambitious program.
Yeah, really good and efficient summary, Tom. That's
unusual.
Unusual for you. Congratulations. Yeah. So clearly active drug, clearly active in combo. Let me just ask you, and I'll ask Petros to comment too. Where do you think the ultimate home for that drug slash combo is? If you said, boy, it's going to have the biggest impact in X, in what setting? Go ahead, Tom. You first.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, I predict that it's going to be used really widely in urothelial cancer. I think it's currently the most active drug we have. And I think...
What setting, though? What setting is it going to have the biggest
Well,
impact?
I think EV Pembro is going to be used frontline for metastatic disease.
Frontline.
But I also think it's going to be used in the neoadjuvant setting as well.
Okay. Similar to current chemo. Petros, yeah. What do you think about EV comments?
I agree with, Tom did a fantastic job covering it. I think the most immediate actionability will be in the frontline setting. We're waiting for the FDA to review the data. We're going to hear soon, in the next few months, if Pembro EV will be approved for accelerated approval for cisplatin-eligible patients. Obviously, as Tom said, we need to wait for the phase 3 EV302 to have a comparison with standard of care chemotherapy. I think if you ask me 5 years from now, I think it's very possible that neoadjuvant slash adjuvant Pembro EV may actually capture that space. As Tom said, there are two phase 3 trials there.
And let me ask you both about toxicity as you're giving this drug, it alone or in combination. I mean, you give it as you give chemotherapy, i.e. hold doses when you want, maybe skip the third week. I mean, do you maintain that flexibility or not?
Yes, so I think that the moment it's given on a day 1, 8, 15 regime as a monotherapy and a day 1, 8 in combination with pembrolizumab on a 3-week cycle, my experience of this is that when you're getting into toxicity, as you do with chemotherapy, you know, skipping doses, skipping out on day 15 of the monotherapy, dose reductions, all of these things are really important. And in fact, the chemotherapy type dosing that we're used to with cisplatin is actually not that dissimilar. You know, we often miss day eight and we often dose reduce a little bit. I mean gemcitabine, not
same
cisplatin.
Principle. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with Tom. I tend to start with 1.25 mg per kg day 1-8-15. My immediate response, if someone has toxicity, especially after the first cycle, dose reduce 1 mg per kg and keeping the same scheduling dosing. If I see someone struggling day 8, I have actually, in some cases, skip day 8 and do it every 2 weeks.
Okay.
But this is my second maneuver. And then I may adjust accordingly the dose reductions or adjusting the schedule as I go forward in a kind of long-term maintenance phase.
Got it. Anything else we want to say about EV before we move on, Tom?
Let's go to SG.
SG, all right, Petros, the SG man.
A lot to say, but I will try to be as efficient as Tom is. So cohort 1, 2, and 3 from Trophy User 1 trial will be the main topic of what I will say. I will just start by saying that this antibody drug conjugate targets TROP2, a different target than Nectin-4. It's a hydrolyzable linker connecting and linking that anti-TROP2 antibody with SN38, which is a metabolite of irinotecan, a very potent inhibitor of topoisomerase 1. So different mechanism of action, and I probably see no reason to have cross resistance between the two. So I can see them being used, you know, in the same patient, one after the other. Now, if you think about the phase 1 data, 31% response rate with such dose of topotecan and SIGL agent in previously treated patients, that led to the Trophy User 1 cohort 1, which is a phase 2 trial with such dose of topotecan SIGL agent in patients with multiple prior therapies. After chemotherapy, after checkpoint inhibitors, these patients were heavily pretreated with a median number of prior therapies between 2 and 8. So heavily pretreated patient population, such dose of topotecan SIGL agent had the overall response rate 27%. This was 113 patient population, 27% response rate, median duration of response between 6 and 7 months. I would say most responses are rapid at the time of the first scan, and some of them are durable in a proportion of patients. Toxicity profile is different compared to enfortumab. You see bone marrow toxicity, neutropenia. About 10% of patients had febrile neutropenia. My personal tip is to use growth factor up front as a primary prophylaxis. I have seen good results in that and less need to dose reduce. The other thing to keep in mind is diarrhea. About 2/3 of the patients may have diarrhea, usually grade 1, grade 2. It usually happens around the drug administration week and usually gets controlled with anti-diarrhea medications and hydration. Other side effects, you know, less common fatigue, GI, nausea, appetite changes, anorexia, alopecia. Overall, well-tolerated drug in most patients. The cohort 2 data is a different population. It's post-checkpoint inhibition, second line. We'll see data in the upcoming meetings. We have some early signals that Dr. Petrylak presented showing activity in the cohort 2, again, second line post-checkpoint inhibition. Stay tuned for data coming up soon. And cohort 3, I had the chance to present the data, pembrolizumab plus atezolizumab combination, second line platinum refractory population. A population that was difficult to treat, these are patients who had primary early progression of platinum-based chemo and they need novel agents, combinations, and trials. Pembrolizumab plus atezolizumab, based on investigator review assessment, had a 34% response rate, 61% disease control rate. We're going to show the updated data very soon. So stay tuned.
Just
Brian.
Tell us now. Just tell us right now.
Just stay patient for a little bit more time. We're going to show data with longer follow-up and central review assessment. Pembro plus HG second line. So stay tuned for that coming up.
So let me ask you both the two most prominent ADCs that you just described. You start with you, Petros. I know the mechanistic differences, but clinical data, right, comparing across trials, do you think there's differences? You mentioned lack of cross-resistance. If with the data we have now, and let's just take monotherapy, how do you choose which one to use in which patient or which sequence maybe?
Always with a caveat, it's hard to compare across trials, different populations, selection confounders. Having said that, I think the primary driver for me is the level of evidence. Right now, and Tom probably would agree, you have overall survival benefit in the EV-301 trial, you know, which clear with, you know, a hazard ratio 0.70. So I think most patients, you know, post-chemotherapy, post-checkpoint inhibition will probably get EV based on that data. Of course, are there a population of patients who might potentially think about SG first? I think patients who had bad neuropathy, maybe grade 2 or higher, I may use atezolizumab first in this population.
Fair. Tom, anything to add to that?
No, I agree with that. I mean, I think that it's fair to say at the moment two or three things. Firstly, I think it's fair to say that the EV data, with all the caveats across trial comparison, looks, the response rates look a bit higher. Secondly, I think it's also fair to say that there is a question mark around the combination of immune checkpoint inhibition with SG. And there is an issue about which payloads are optimal for combinations and whether the MMAE payloads combine better than the topoisomerase 1 payloads. Now, there are many caveats to that, and the numbers are relatively small. But it's notable, I haven't yet seen a big randomized phase 3 of SG plus an immune checkpoint inhibitor, whereas we do have a number of those with EV plus Pembro. So, and I think when you look at the response rates of 36 versus, I know it's pre-treated. Petros, I agree. One of my big concerns is the SG cohort has been pre-treated with chemotherapy. And it may be the pre-treatment with chemotherapy that's making the combination more difficult. And had it been a frontline SG plus Pembro trial, maybe it would have been better. Maybe the chemotherapy is causing problems, having those patients having been previously treated. But as it currently stands, I would say the EV program looks exceptionally good and the SG program looks good. It's not that there's anything wrong with the development of SG. It's just
was it
not
the person
not
developing it? Are you attacking Petros here? What's going on?
No, Petros, I think
he's going to punch me. But Petros, anything? What's your perspective on that? Obviously, you've been knee deep in both, really. But
yeah,
Petros, I also wanted to ask you about your GCSF, use of GCSF, because I know you've got strong feelings on that, and I agree with you.
No, Tom, I think you covered it well. I would say that also it's difficult to compare across trials. Obviously, different, you know, mechanisms of action. So I would say that the patient population is a big thing of what we do. Patient selection is a big thing in drug development. We don't have frontline data yet with tacituzumab. Tom, to your point, we're working on cohort 4. This will be cisplatin plus tacituzumab in the frontline setting, followed by avelumab plus sace. We don't have enough patients yet to report, but this is ongoing. Yep. We'll give some light to what Tom alluded to, first-line data. The other point I would say is, you know, in the cohort 3, I agree with you, we'd love to see higher response rates, and stay tuned for the data coming soon. The question is, will, you know, the prior receipt of platinum, especially with early prior progression of platinum, those patients usually do poorly with checkpoint inhibitor alone. And the other point I have is kudos from Pafde. Was running a trial with sacituzumab plus enfortumab combination. I was actually impressed to see that trial is ongoing, but we have not seen data yet. And I think it's continuing, which means safety might be okay. We have to see the data.
Okay.
I'm quite anxious about sequencing these drugs. I'm not convinced they're going to be non-cross resistant. I mean, my experience of cancer medicine is in urothelial cancer is that sequencing drugs hasn't proven to be spectacularly successful.
But we don't have any data for these two.
No, we don't have data
for those, But you're nervous.
We have about 10 patients in the cohort one of a trophy, U01, about 10 patients who had SATSI after enfortumab, and 3 out of 10 response. So 30% response rate.
About the same, but
about
who knows?
The same, but small sample size.
Anecdotes, okay. Exactly. Tom, let's move on. What's your next ADC?
I was going to go to RC48 or disitamab vedotin. And that is the first HER2 targeted ADCs. This drug is also got MMAE as the payload. So it's HER2 targeted with MMAE as the payload. It was known as RC48. It was recently presented, I think, at ASCO this year. There are a couple of cohorts, a combination as a monotherapy cohort in a pre-treated population with a relatively modest number of patients. I think it was about 35. And it showed response rates above 50%, about 52%, not really too much on PFS and OS with those small numbers. There remains some uncertainty about the HER2 biomarker, because we also saw a presentation with activity in low expression of HER2. So there's some uncertainty around HER2 as a biomarker. And then we also saw some further exceptional data with RC48 in a broad spectrum of patients, not exclusively either pre-treated or untreated, with response rates of 72% with a combination with an immune checkpoint inhibitor. This wasn't pembrolizumab, it was a different immune checkpoint inhibitor that we're not using widely. So again, the numbers are small, but the data looks quite similar to what we've
small,
seen with
EV-like,
but there is some uncertainty around the biomarker. The Chinese group that's presented this has done some work by selecting by the biomarker and some work without that rigorous selection. And the process is, it's hard to say, partly because the numbers are small, about exactly what we've shown so far.
And clearly, you think the activity in HER2 low or unexpressing, is it just a inability to accurately measure? Is it a methodology issue, or is there some other mechanism even?
Well, we're measuring it with immunohistochemistry.
Right.
And there is always a grayness. We all know the grayness around IHC measurement. We're taking historical samples, and we know that that may or may not be accurate. And of course, there's tumor heterogeneity. So, you know, the metastatic sites might be different from the primary tumor. So there's lots of uncertainty around this HER2 biomarker. It would be lovely to use the biomarker. And one of the questions is it 2 or 3+? Is it 1+? Or is it all comers? And I think that the ongoing trials that are currently running, phase 2 and phase 3 trials planned in this setting, all of which are going to clarify this biomarker issue. And I think that's going to be an important component of this.
Got it. Petros, anything to add?
I think Todd covered it perfectly. I think, Tom, in my mind, HER2 low, we have lessons learned from breast cancer. I think we probably need some degree of expression of the target. I will be open and willing to test this in HER2 low, maybe +1 immunohistochemistry, then methodological variations and differences to Brian's point in measuring HER2 historically, but I think they have tried to use a consistent biomarker. So I'm okay to include that cohort of HER2 low. I'm less enthusiastic about HER2 negative. I think you need some degree, even low expression of the HER2 for those to work. My question to the future is, if they launch, you know, phase 2 and phase 3 trials in the frontline setting, they could potentially compete with Pembro EV data. So the future might potentially be, if the cells pan out, theoretically, philosophically, HER2 positive, you may use the DV Pembro, HER2 negative, if Pembro EV. So we'd like to see also Pembro EV data based on HER2 expression.
I was just about to say that. Yeah. And listen, this is in kidney cancer, we have multiple IOTKI regimens, so it's not unusual to develop drugs this way, et cetera, not as targeted. But anything else about this ADC? Or
yes, it's really important to acknowledge that the payload is, although the payload is the same, the target is different. And of course, the distribution of Nectin and HER2 are different from each other. And therefore, it appears to be more modest in terms of skin toxicity and other toxicity. Now, it's got its own toxicity profile, of course, but the toxicity profile for DV and EV are distinct from one another.
And probably same comments and considerations around sequencing and combos and everything as we did with SG.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the mechanism of resistance will be interesting to see, because right now we do not know the mechanism of resistance. Right. Is it Nectin-4 loss? Is it like microtubule related? It's hard to tell. So that may also play a role in the sequence.
Fair. All right, Petros, let's wrap it up. I think we got one more.
So very interesting data with ADCs. Let me cover briefly the data that Matt Gaske presented at ASCO GU last year, 2022, with a combination of Nivo plus a different anti-HER2 ADC, trastuzumab deruxtecan, TDXD. We have seen exciting data with Standing Ovation, with breast cancer data, with HER2 low expression, with TDXD at ASCO annual meeting last year. We also have this small data set Matt Galski presented at ASCO GU. These are patients with platinum refractory metastatic urothelial cancer. They had 2 cohorts. Cohort 3 had HER2 +3, +2, and the HER2 +1 expression only in cohort 4. 34 patients, most of them cohort 3. So high expression of HER2, very few with low HER2 expression. Of course, it's a combination HER2 ADC plus Nivo. We don't have comparison, we don't have a randomized trial, so hard to tease out the individual contribution of components in that trial. But 34 patients, the combination of Nivo plus DDXD was a response rate 37%. About a third of those were CRs. 2/3 were PRs. Overall, median duration of response was more than a year, 13 months. Median PFS, 7 months. And a rapid response, about 2 months. So the combination Nivo plus trastuzumab deruxtecan seems active, effective. Obviously, we don't have good sense with the individual contribution of components. We need a larger number of patients. Yeah. I have not seen any follow-up trials with this combination or DDXD alone in urothelial cancer. Toxicity, mainly GI, nausea, vomiting, fatigue. And the other issue with DDXD is interstitial lung disease like pneumonitis that happened in about 1/4 of patients in that study. So I would like to see more data. I think there's activity for sure. and huge enthusiasm with this aura with TDXT. So I would like to see more data with this compound.
Have you seen interstitial lung disease with the other ADCs? I don't remember that being prominent.
Not that much. I think it's anecdotal and very rare. I don't know, Tom, you have seen pneumonitis. It's very low frequency.
I've seen a little bit of pneumonitis with EV, but not really common. But it's definitely there as an adverse event. And Petros, this also targets topoisomerase 1. And again, the combination is not in the sort of 70%, as we've seen with the MMAE combinations. Is that because of the target? Is that just too early to say? Or do we think, actually, as with chemotherapy, because we've been speculating for some time that the chemotherapy targets, the reason why they didn't combine well with immune checkpoint inhibition is because, you know, there were problems with the chemotherapy combination because gemcitabine might be the wrong drug. Do you think actually the payload is relevant for the combination?
Tom, you're asking a fantastic question. You know, I was thinking about that, and Matt Galsky made this point at the ASCO annual meeting. Again, the challenge is the confounding by the different lines of therapy. You have, for example, the TTXD plus Nivo was in platinum refractory population. SZ-Pemplo is a platinum refractory population. So numerically, yes, you see differences, but the DV data was frontline. EV-Pembro data is frontline. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to make a huge conclusion about the target of the payload. I think it's a good question. Hopefully in the future with trials, randomized trials in the same line of therapy, we may answer this question, which, you know, payload is more relevant. In the meantime, it's good to have options. And I think it's great that we're evaluating those options across lines of therapy.
Petros, one more question for you, if I may. Have we got a plan for TDXD moving forwards in urothelial cancer? Obviously, it's massive in breast cancer. What's going on in urothelial cancer?
Yeah, it's a great question, Tom. I have not seen a lot of follow-up data. It was interesting to see those future designs. I think it merits a bigger trial. I would probably think about two different cohorts, HER2 high and HER2 low. And ideally, I would like to see, you know, two different, you know, strategies. One is TTXD by itself and also in combination with Nivo. I think it's probably reasonable to, you know, treat, you know, patients in the platinum refractory setting, but also get some data in the frontline setting. I think it's worth the shot. Obviously, the competition with the DV Pembro trial will be competing for the same patients, but I think it's worth asking those questions. And eventually, why not go to the neoadjuvant setting, right? Just platinum ineligible patients, you know, go by HER2, stratify high versus low, and get the combo trial and maybe a cohort with monotherapy or the combination of the neoadjuvant setting. These are my ideas. I have not seen them so far, you know.
Well, now they're everybody's ideas because they're going to be listening to this. So this is so clearly ADCs have activity, immune combinations particularly exciting, and they're going to be a big part of urothelial cancer, probably across many disease states.
Transformative,
so to speak.
I would say.
Yeah, seems that way. Tom, anything to add to wrap us up? This has been an unusually efficient podcast for us.
Petros, I've got a question for you. There was some biliary cancer data came out. GemCis plus Pembro versus GemCis had a survival advantage. How come that combination's working in biliary cancer and not in bladder cancer?
You know, the classical, fantastic, Tom, complicated question. So very quickly, a few thoughts, Tom, to share with you. Number one, I think with different disease types across, you know, different biology of disease, hard to compare data across different cancer types. But if you think about, you know, response rates in urothelial cancer with chemotherapy, it's relatively high, 45-50%, a higher bar. The second question is molecularly, when we give checkpoint inhibition and platinum-based chemo in urothelial cancer, are we targeting the same population? We may probably have a significant overlap molecularly in patients who respond to IO and chemotherapy. And the other question is, you know, in the Javelin-Bodron had a trial, we definitely had a selection of patients, you know, who had the response to stable disease with chemotherapy and those benefits. So I think it's hard to comment across tumor types. It seems in stomach cancer, head and neck, lung, the concurrent chemo IO seems to work. It does not work in urothelial cancer. I think, you know, it's different disease biology and maybe some overlap in the patient population who responds to both. But I think the sequential approach seems to be the winner in urothelial cancer.
You have hypotheses about that?
Yeah, like, I mean, I've been saying for some time I was worried it was the gemcitabine and the chemotherapy combination, and it looks like that's not the case. And therefore, it does look like there at least a component of it is disease-specific, which means everything
it's
I've been
surprising.
Talking about.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but you know, everything I've been talking about on these podcasts have turned out to be completely wrong for those people listening.
Again, not surprising, right?
So
for the regular listeners, not
yeah. So, but the reason why that's relevant for the ADCs is, you know, we've been talking a lot about the payloads being crucial, But actually the biology of the disease is important. And if you look at TDXD, it does look, I mean, the breast cancer data is absolutely spectacular. And you know, the issue is, had that data been as spectacular in urothelial cancer? Probably not, speaking frankly. So I think it's fair to say that this continues to be a complicated field.
Agreed.
For sure. And we're going to show some data in the future with dose DenSenVac plus checkpoint inhibition. We have a couple of new adjuvant trials, upper tract disease.
You know, there was some, Petros, there was that great data with docetaxel and nab-paclitaxel with immune checkpoint inhibition, which had response rates of in platinum refractory disease of sort of 40%. And so there is, you know, there's quite a lot of data kicking around with combinations at the moment. And it's not, it's too simple to say that, you know, chemotherapy plus immune therapy doesn't work in urothelial cancer. That would be a mistake.
For sure, for sure. Tom, we got to wrap up. I have to get Petros to the airport.
Yeah, yeah, get to the airport. See you soon.
Great podcast.
Fantastic to talk to you, my friend. Stay well.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
All right.